The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond episode, I gotta look at it because it's been so long since we last recorded an episode, sort of. It's episode 647 of IGN's Weekly PlayStation Podcast, part two, because boy oh boy, have we had a day. I'm joined this week by the one and only Lucy O'Brien.
Hello, how are you, Jonathan? Morning we've had.
What a morning, so much so that it's now the afternoon. For those who didn't see my tweet, who listen or watch the show, we recorded an episode with the four of us. The whole cast was back together. I thought it was a great episode. We talked about a bunch of stuff. And unfortunately, due to some technical issues, we lost the episode to time.
The worst part is that, like, there was so much great discussion, so many great jokes. No one's ever going to hear it.
Yeah, lost it's a...
to the annals of time.
It's such a shame, especially they'll never hear my rendition of Holding Out for a Hero, which I used to open the show. It was pretty great, but I promise I would never do it again. As I said during that show, you remember so well.
One time only,
and no one will ever hear it. But of course, we do have plenty to talk about, so I do want to get to it. I do want to mention at the top of this will probably be a shorter episode due to the technical limitations. But we do have plenty of Last of Us Part II to talk about. If you haven't seen already, I confirmed, and we did on IGN as well as my Twitter, that I am playing and going to be reviewing The Last of Us Part II for IGN. The review embargo is June 12th at 12:01 a.m. Pacific. I am not allowed to say anything else about the game other than I'm playing and reviewing it. We will get into my impressions of the review, of course, on June 12th, so you can look forward to that. But what
so jealous. Like, I'm just sitting here going, yeah, cool, that's great. And I'm just full of envy. It's chewing me up inside. I cannot wait to get my hands on this game.
Well, I can't tell you whether or not you should want to not wait or not, but you'll have to wait for my impressions till then. But what we can talk about is, of course, the state of play and the recent sort of Inside the Last of Us videos that have been coming out. We delayed recording the episode this week, of course, to talk about the state of play. We got roughly a 20-minute deep dive into the sequel. For those who didn't watch or did watch during the live stream, this is funny to basically be saying the same stuff we did this morning. I definitely would recommend going to check out the 4K, like, now uploaded version of the video on YouTube. Like, if you watch the live stream, it just isn't the same quality as watching pretty gorgeous gameplay, you know, on the video as it is in the final upload. But what we got was a sort of overview of the mechanics, the story, the world, a setting the stage by Neil Druckmann, the director of the game, and then a sort of 8-minute chunk of gameplay that was following Ellie through a whole sort of scenario. Since I'm, you know, not wanting to blur the lines of what I can and can't say, but for now, Lucy, I want to start off, like, give me a sort of overview and then we can get into the nitty gritty of it. How did you feel about the state of play showcase for The Last of Us?
I loved it. It was definitely the most impressive state of play for me personally so far. Just the way it was presented by Neil, and, you know, presented with a great deal of compassion by Neil, considering the times that we're in, which I really appreciated. And it was, you know, it was a proper sort of like hype reveal for me. Well, not so much a reveal, obviously. You know, everyone knows this game exists, but like in terms of what they showed, in terms of the info we were given about the world and how you traverse it, etc. It really felt like I was sort of in the crowd at an at an E3 showcase. And for me, like, that is kind of, that is the best I can sort of ask for, really, from a state of play. I thought it was really, 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 really great.
Yeah, I that just brought to mind, and I forgot to talk about it when we first did this, so glad I'm doing it here. Back when I was in college, I weaseled my way into a few E3s by, you know, using my school's newspaper, and I got to go to the Sony press conference, I believe, where they did The Last of Us 1 demo, which was Joel basically going in and out of the apartment building and sneaking around in that brutal showcase, and it ended with, I forget who was demoing it, but they finished it and they were like in a really like power stance holding the controller and just pulling all these moves off, and they like dropped the controller, like mic dropped it and walked off stage at the final kill. And this gameplay sequence though evoked a lot of the same moments of like the, you know, it's a word we overuse a lot, or the industry does, but like the visceral nature of this combat. Like this, the sequel really seems to be leaning into the every little moment is going to matter. Every moment wants to be evocative, whether it's gruesome or brutal, or, you know, by the skin of your teeth, you escape. Every little bit wants to be impactful, which is, you know, ambitious, but seems to be paying off in that demo.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm going to need to go for a massive run and then like sink 3 whiskeys before I start playing this game. You know what I mean? I'm going to have to get some sort of energy out of me and sort of be in a very kind of calm headspace in order to play, because it does. It's, you know, we've always known that The Last of Us, brutal, unforgiving world, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, again, I always forget that these are characters that I love. You know, and there are massive stakes. I do really care about the fates of these characters. I do really care about what happens to them and the journey that they go on. And I think one of the most sort of profound moments for me in this particular demo was when Ellie dabs the woman with the Vita.
As we
you know
said,
what I mean? Yeah. Like she will forever be immortalized as the woman playing Hotline Miami on a PlayStation Vita before she, you know, is the last thing she does before she gets killed.
How did she die? Playing a Vita.
Playing a Vita. Oh, that's just heartbreaking on so many levels.
I'm sure it's how Greg Miller wants to go out.
So, you know, one of the sort of moments that really reminded me of the series kind of beating heart, you know, it's humanity, is when Ellie does stab this woman in the neck, and it's gross and it's sort of sudden and it's clumsy, and the whole tussle is sort of frustrating, you know, and you can kind of sense Ellie's frustration in that moment. And she sort of says like, "Ah, that was dumb." Like, you know, something like that, like, or that was really stupid. That was really dumb. And it was sort of like, yes, that whole thing was dumb. It was unnecessary. It was like that woman didn't need to turn around and try and kill Ellie. Like, it was all so unnecessary, and the whole sort of scenario seemed so frustrating. And it was also like the way she said it, it was kind of like she was bemused. Like, it was slightly like bleakly funny, you know. And it just, again, like, it just reminded me of Ellie. It was just like, this is Ellie. I forgot. Like, she is funny. She is. You know, there is so much sort of humanity to her. She's like, despite the fact that she's very much being presented as this, like, she's much more, I don't want to say cold-blooded, but I guess there's no other word for it. Like, she's much more, she's had to survive a long time in this very unforgiving world. And like, she's hardened, you know, really get that sense, but at the same time, she's still Ellie. And I really just, that little moment really brought that home for me in this state of play, more than anything. And it just reminded me of how devastating this experience is going to be.
Yeah, it's funny thinking back, like seeing this gameplay demo and even going back to the preview that I did last year and like sinking into the role of Ellie, but, you know, revisiting this character that obviously was so endearing. And it speaks volumes, I think, about of what Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson did in that first game, and obviously what the script pulled off and everything about that game that brought these characters to life, that made them so indelible and makes you care for them despite all of the outright terrible things they do in that game. Like, you know, they're doing it to survive, of course, and the whole question of what toes the line of morality as part of the game. But at the end of the day, it's like, these are people who are killing quite a bit, but you end up caring for them in such amazing ways because of so many of those small moments that just bring out their humanity and who they are.
And you know, that is something that someone in Ellie's shoes would say. I think that, like, games have kind of grappled with their characters' more sort of sense of mortality and you know, how they acknowledge what they're doing. I think, you know, they tried to do it with the Tomb Raider reboot to a certain degree of success. I loved what they did with the character of Lara Croft, but I didn't necessarily think that having her sort of like, you know, every single time she killed someone or like murdered a deer, you know, she was so shaken by it. It didn't really quite ring. I don't know. I understood what they were going for, but you know, she so quickly switched to a much more confident, cold-blooded killer that I didn't, that the initial vulnerability didn't really ring true to me. And of course, you know, on the other hand, we've got sort of, you know, Nathan Drake, who doesn't bat an eye when he's like plowing down goons left, right, and center, right? But I felt that this was a really real reaction to you know, having killed a person for the, how many, you know, she must have killed at this point so many people, but you know, it still gets that little human moment afterwards, you know. There's no, that she's not ready to, like, you know, whip out a quip. She's, you know, she's not like, you know, she hasn't got some like Vita related pun at the ready, you know, to like really sort of like, I'm a cool cold-blooded action hero. Like, she's still very much like aware of what she's doing and that she's ending lives. And I don't know, I may be reading too much into this.
No,
but it was really profound for me.
I just thought of the worst Vita quip.
All right,
you could say,
I
want to
hear
person,
it. I want
to
hear it.
I have to say it now.
Let's hear it.
Guess you won't be near that Vita any longer.
That's really...
Because of Near, the program that was on the PlayStation Vita that no one used.
That was so dumb. Was, like,
I know.
Like, it was like, you know...
Seven people.
Like, puns are, like, not meant to be. Like, they never really evoke, like, a kind of, like, a general, like, ha, 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 like that. But
of
that
course.
Wasn't even, like... Even on an intellectual level, I found that painful. So well,
I mean, that's, thank you. Yeah, that's what I like to go for when I think of a pun, is how painful can it be? But no, I do, speaking of the pain, I do
want to
talk
about...
Wait,
I've got a better one. Hasta la vida, baby.
And it's at least a double because it's both a pun and a reference. I like it. Moving on from our painful puns to the pain of The Last of Us Part II's gameplay, I do want to talk about, because this was stuff I saw a lot in the preview last year, mm-hmm. but they dive into, and this is, I guess for you and a lot of the audience, the first time seeing a lot of it in motion. What do you think of sort of the adjustments they're making to the stealth and the gameplay combat wise, because, you know, a lot has been made, as silly as it is, of them adding a jump button and the ability for Ellie to go prone and lie flat, but like the contextuality of her stealth in the environment is a lot more advanced, I think, than what we've seen in the first game.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely feels like a nice middle ground between the original Last of Us and something more outrageous like an Uncharted, where you've got so much free reign. You know, Nathan Drake is so agile and can sort of like move anywhere across the map. I think it looks incredibly versatile in terms, like, she looks incredibly versatile in terms of how you choose to move her. You know, there's stealth is obviously still a massive option, but I love that she can swing on these. What are they? What is she swinging on? Like, she's
she's swinging on a couple, I think, like ropes or like like broken cable lines and stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I love that she can jump. I love that in the 6 years that she has, you know, that have occurred since the last game, she has learned to swim. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
They really drove that home in the, you know, the demo that she can actually swim now.
No need to grab a raft for anyone.
Exactly. And obviously it looks like they're putting, you know, a lot more emphasis into choosing your own play style in terms of like weaponry and how you want to approach combat as well. You know, I love that we have a broader tool set, because in terms of it being kind of a stealth game, because like fundamentally it seems like The Last of Us Part II is still very much like, you know, let's avoid combat where we can, because like combat is like messy and loud, and that's not something you want to, a messy loud thing isn't something you want to happen in that world, have happened in that world. But it really looks like there are so many options in which to sort of approach any scenario, which I think is fantastic for a stealth game. That's exactly what you want. You don't want to just be, you know, slowly, painfully making your way across an environment. You want to have like tools at your disposal in order to get from A to B in different ways, you know. And I love what I saw so far.
Yeah, the versatility of it seems to be a thing they're really pushing for. It was something I noticed in the demo that I got to play last year. That one had me facing off with dogs as well. There's a whole big preview I wrote last year that you can check out on IGN. But that even further made it more of a like brutal scenario of you have more options, but so do the enemies in this game, it feels like, in what I played and what we saw. So it's, yeah, there's a lot of evolutions, I think, of the first game that we're seeing there. I was curious what you thought about the fact that, as someone who, you know, obviously did really love the first game and does have a fondness for the characters and the storytelling of it all, this state of play didn't really, I think, say much about the story that they haven't said in other trailers or in interviews and things like that. Are you pretty much okay with where we have, you know, knowledge of the story at this point? Do you want to know anymore? Do you have any concern about the story? Like,
weeks aside. It's a difficult thing to answer because, you know, full disclosure, I think I mentioned it on a previous episode, but yeah, someone chose to jump into my Instagram and post some leaks there, which was, thanks, fella. Thanks for taking that big dump on my day. But, you know, like all things aside, you know, earlier when we were recording with Altano and with Max, I'm going to steal one of Altano's points, but really for me, it's all about the journey. It's not about, you know, getting there, sort of like sex, you know what I mean? Like you don't, it's not just about the end result. You've also got to enjoy the journey. I don't know why I made that.
A metaphor we didn't have on the first episode. I'll let the audience know that.
But really, like any, you know, any pleasurable experience, you know, it's like just because, you know, the ending of Citizen Kane doesn't mean Citizen Kane is not an awesome film. To use a really like wanky, hackneyed reference there. But, you know, I am so excited to go on this journey with these characters who I love. I definitely feel like we've been given enough top line information. I don't really want to know anymore.
Sure.
Again, yeah. Leaks aside. I think if they revealed any more, I think it would be overkill. I think what we know is that there are enormous stakes. There are enormous stakes just by virtue of this being The Last of Us Part Two, because we care so much about these characters. Like seeing them go through another ordeal, already the stakes are extremely high.
Yeah.
But, you know, we know that, again, we've found out about these two sort of factions or whatever you want to call them. And, of course, there are some new enemy types, which look pretty awesome. But, yeah, I think we know that the stakes are high, and I don't really need any more information beyond that.
Yeah, it's funny how there is a, like, meta level of stakes to this game, because it is such a common sentiment of like, oh, I finished The Last of Us, I didn't need a sequel. But we have known that there is a sequel for a while now, and we're getting to the point where it's like, can the sequel, I think, live up to what many people consider to be one of the best stories in gaming ever and one of the best games, you know, of modern gaming?
Well, it's interesting, Dorno, because like I was one of those people that was very much like, we don't need a sequel. We don't need a sequel. It's perfect as it is. Let's not like run this thing into the ground. I don't want to see it become a franchise, you know? And I don't believe that it will head that way. I don't think Sony really operates in that way. Especially with this type of storytelling.
Yeah. Like if they wanted a populist thing that would sell well, Naughty Dog could just do Uncharted 5.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
If that were the impetus.
But yeah, like originally I was very sort of anti it, and the more I've seen of it and the more I've heard the leads talk about their approach to it, I've become really sold on it, obviously. And now it's less I don't want this game to exist. And it's more, I am very scared for these characters. And I almost like, it's going to hurt me watching them go through this or, you know, going on this journey along with them, but I'm very, you know, on board for the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. I, of course, don't want to say anything more than what I've addressed from my last preview, so I will keep my thoughts on the state of play short other than to say, check out my review in a few weeks. But yeah, I think they did a really good job of showing off, like you were saying, I think like as a presentation, this and the Ghost of Tsushima state of plays were really, really great fill-ins for our standard like E3 presentations or PSX presentations. Like these are direct to the audience that really cares about this game or about PlayStation right. exclusives. They're formatted in a way that it doesn't feel like you're getting too little, but they also don't feel like they've been giving too much in these. They're a really good balance. And like, I think we'll probably see state of plays that go back to the here's 15 games in 20 minutes. But I do hope we see a balance of these going forward, especially as we get into next gen and see, you know, sequels to God of War and Horizon and Spider-Man probably. Like, I think taking these like measured, focused approaches really let these games shine and speak for themselves and let the team speak for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that devs and publishers can't always show so much of their games like way far out from release date. I think this was a really perfect sort of segment to show this close to release date. Like one of the things that I really also want to touch on is in terms of like evolution from the first game is the sort of behavior of like the enemies, you know, the AI. There was that one moment where she grabs that guy and this is in gameplay and he says something like, hey, take it easy now, take it easy now. And you know, I'm sort of wondering, I was like immediately thinking what would have happened if she just sort of like kept holding on to him? You know, what would we have seen there? It's just, it gave a lot more life to you know, these faceless bad guys, I suppose, that didn't exist in the first game. And Jonathan, I know that you, during your preview events, you were told that essentially AI are going to be more advanced, like that they're going to have relationships with one another and, you know, react if what, like one of their fellow cult leaders gets killed, they're going to react to that.
Yeah, I spoke to Druckmann last, I guess it was September now, it feels like a decade ago, but we spoke about the AI and what really matters to them, and they even talked about that in that follow-up, like inside the details of the Last of Us video that launched also this week. He really wanted to emphasize that, like, yeah, you're going up against, you know, a group of five or six enemies, but those enemies have relationships to one another. They call each other by name. If, you know, let's say theoretically, maybe two of them are in a relationship, like you killed the woman and the man comes across her and he's like, she killed Jennifer, quick, the body, like there's blood trailing this way, go. Like they were giving examples of just, you know, they will react to you doing things. And I think they really wanted to emphasize that, like, yes, stealth games often have enemies, you know, like going in a set pattern, but your behavior will really trip up those patterns and cause them to adapt to your behavior, which is really cool, especially presumably when you think about like getting into longer scenarios and how that can play out.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that just goes back to that, you know, that discussion we were having a little earlier about this sort of video game protagonists being aware of mortality and being aware of what they're doing, and in turn, like us being more aware of it, you know, like instead of being Nathan Drake, you know, this is definitely more like, I feel like this is more me in this world, you know, rather than a sort of a hot shot with a, you know, with a shotgun.
Yeah, it definitely, they've talked a lot about, I think, in these behind the scenes videos too, about they really want you to have to feel the impact of the, you know, choices the characters are making, especially when they're choices you're making when it comes to the combat and stuff like that. So yeah, I do love, from what I saw from this demo and that preview, really the as I think I was saying earlier, sort of the ability to both give you an evolution of the combat, but to also evolve what you're fighting against. Like this isn't you're outmatching them. Like this does really feel like there's a even playing field that's been created.
Absolutely. And extending that to the infected themselves, obviously there are some returning infected. We saw the clickers and the stalkers, but there's also the shamblers which a traditional big boy that explodes when you get really close kind of character design. But again, in that world, it's just made a little extra gross, you know, just a little extra like, oh God, think of how that thing would smell. And then, you know, I really liked the little tease of the war of something unknown in the distance there. It just, you know, also serves to remind us that these games are very survival horror-esque at you know, in their bones. It's all about sort of surviving against massive odds. And they can be really terrifying. I'm like, I am sort of waiting to just be hunched behind a car, you know, with the clicker kind of stalking me. Like, I just love that stuff. But it's so incredibly tense. And
yeah,
I love that they're kind of upping the stakes with the sort of the mutants as well. The mutant men.
Yeah.
Stinky mutant boys.
As beautiful as the gameplay looks and everything, seeing more fidelity clickers, maybe not on the top of the list of things you want to see from, you know, graphical fidelity. But I do want to say, like, the gameplay preview and everything they showed, it definitely looks like they are pushing the PS4. Like, this is definitely a, like, end-of-life cycle game, I think, what we're seeing from the technical side of the game.
Oh, honestly, I reckon what's going to happen is end credits are going to roll and my PlayStation is just going to go up in flames, and I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
How
did she die? Playing Vita. How did the PS4 die? Last of Us Part 2.
Yes, exactly. It really does. It looks stunning. Ghost of Tsushima similarly looks stunning. I do feel like these are very fitting kind of, at least graphically, because obviously I can't speak to anything else, but graphically, these do look like proper mic drops on this generation of consoles.
Yeah, it gets me, you know, and this is a good transition into it, unless you have anything else on the Last of Us note, but it is a really exciting, like, yeah, PS5 is becoming a real thing. Like, we're theoretically 6 months out probably from the release, and we're going to start seeing those games. And yes, you know, we've talked about a lot on IGN as a whole, and Tom had that great editorial. The initial jump is not going to be huge, but I do think we are going to see stuff from the first party side of stuff, especially as the years go on, that really is like, that is next gen. Like, that is really, you know, astounding to see. So to see them pushing these consoles from these state of plays at the end of the life cycle, I can't wait to see what Naughty Dog and Sucker Punch and Santa Monica and everyone does on the PS5.
Oh my God. It just like, it's insane what they will be able to do now. It's sort of like, I'm just looking, because, you know, we're working from home. I'm just looking at my like really tragic TV from 2010. I'm just like, oh God, I've got to upgrade you, fella.
Are you going to upgrade before PS5, you think?
I will have to, otherwise what's the point, really?
Yeah.
So,
might as well just get definitely a CRT at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, exactly. Like, it is very exciting to see what they will do next. But it is hard to fathom anything looking better than this.
Yeah. It'll be a very interesting progression to watch, but especially knowing what these studios have been able to do on both the PS3 and the PS4, I can't wait to see what comes in the PS5 generation. And speaking of that, I do want to touch briefly on, again, now that this show is even further delayed, there's even a higher chance that these rumors come true, but there have been a lot of reports and speculation, but also some pretty well-sourced reports that there will be a PlayStation 5 event likely next week. Speculation from both Jason Schreier, now at Bloomberg, and Jeff Grubb over at VentureBeat is placing it at June 3rd, I believe, is the reported date. Sony has not officially commented, has not said this is officially in the works. We may find out the day before. Who knows? Like, this Last of Us State of Play came 48 hours beforehand. Nintendo often did directs 48 hours beforehand. So it wouldn't shock me if we find out Monday about an event Wednesday. But I don't know about you, Lucy, but I know we were talking a little bit before the show, but it is very weird and surreal to be like, we've been talking about when are they going to show stuff and giving them flack, you know, for being silent in the face of Xbox going, but it feels like we are finally on the cusp of seeing stuff, and it's exciting to just think about that potential.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, I've always maintained that the sort of PS5 marketing rollout has just been really weird, just very odd. You know, I was sort of confident at the beginning that it was all underhand and it would all be rolled out in a much more sort of sensical way, a way that made sense. Yeah. Conventional is probably a better word for it, but like, it hasn't. And I think at this point, Sony really does need to kind of answer the big question that everyone has, which is, am I going to be spending money on this thing at the end of the year? And a whole bunch of dry specs delivered by Mark Cerny is fine, and a couple of JPEGs is fine, and the DualSense reveal was cool, but there's nothing, they haven't actually gone even a little ways to answering that question. And I think that what we need to see now is gameplay. Obviously the box as well, because I think we've sort of, it's been so opaque in our brains as to what a PlayStation 5 actually is. So it would be great to see its actual form. But more than anything, we need proper gameplay, and not just a gameplay demo, you know, because obviously acknowledging what was revealed a couple of weeks ago, but actual gameplay. And I really hope that whatever comes next is that.
Yeah, I think we really need to see them say, especially after the flack that Microsoft got for their presentation, that I am sure Sony took notice of, is very much like, we need to see gameplay. We need to see that these are games running on PS5. Like, that needs to be the little text at the bottom, or like captured via PS5. Like, whatever they need to do, they need to really exemplify that this is what you're going to get when you invest $X into this box in 6 months. And we talked about it a bit on the show last week when you weren't on, but also on the now never airing episode for this week. But I think this is also, as much as they should and need to show gameplay, this is also the one of the few times, I think, as Brian says, legally, where it's okay for them to show us logos, and we'll be okay with that, because it is not just telling you what you're buying into for the next 6 months, but what you're buying into for the next 5-6 years.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, for me, that is, I'm A-okay with that. I do really want to see Horizon Zero Dawn 2, which in our last episode we did sort of, well, the long lost episode, we did like admit that it's like such a like profoundly stupid name for a video game, and I can't actually say it really with a straight face.
Yeah, I'd say we were pretty close to having a good stand-up segment of a comedy album about the Horizon Zero Dawn sequel naming conventions that they're going to have to go with, because the options are Horizon Zero Dawn 2, which is silly, Horizon 1 Dawn, which is sillier, or like
Horizon 1 Dawn makes my skin want to like leave the building.
But the thing is,
it's,
you know,
so dumb.
The thing to me is, Horizon is going to be in the title. That word, without a doubt, is going to be there. Zero Dawn 2 is the most easy to say, and the most like you instantly know what it is.
But it's also brand awareness, right? Like, they can't just dump that brand awareness out. They still have to have it there. I mean, I suppose Horizon is the, I don't know.
But I do think saying like Horizon, you know, Horizon 1 Eclipse is a terrible name.
Yeah. Like, it'll be something like that.
A funny thing that happened, and this was something we, obviously writing a lot of news stories, had a lot of style arguments about. At some point in the marketing of that game, they took out the colon.
Right.
And so it used to be Horizon : Zero Dawn, and then it just became Horizon Zero Dawn, which makes no difference, really. But there was obviously an intention of taking that out. So I have no idea what that game is going to be named. I'm sure we will spend a good 15 minutes on it when it's officially revealed. But yeah, that is a like top of mind. Guerrilla's one of the main first party studios that we haven't heard from for probably the longest amount of time, because that game came out early 2017. And that feels like one I wouldn't be shocked if we get a like cinematic teaser to either open or end the first showcase.
Yeah, and I've banged on this drum for a long time, but I don't want to see that as a launch game or anywhere close to that launch window, because I really want it to be singing on tech that's been pushed and probed for a good chunk of time, because you know it's such a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous world to get lost in, and I want it to be as pretty as can be. But I, you know, it would like just to sort of be told that it exists will go a long way.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I even like today saw Corey Barlog tweet someone did fan art that they did fan art for a God of War 2 God of War sequel, and their tweet just said God of War Ragnarok is coming to PS5, and Corey quote tweets and is like, I've never heard of that. And it's one of those things where it's like, that studio probably has a God of War sequel somewhere in development, but they can't say that.
Yeah.
They can't just off the cuff mention. So these sorts of events, if that game is, you know, 3-4 years off, is a good place to announce that when they want to. But I think we need to see a mix of what we're going to get in the next, you know, like the launch window, and then also what we'll get 2 years from now. Wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, 100% agree. I just want some momentum now more than anything. Yeah. You know, I want the train to start leaving the station, because we've like all got pretty sick of looking at the station.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see what the next station looks like. The next PlayStation. Also, because as you were saying a little bit earlier on, I do want them to show the console either at this or very shortly, like within this event. We had talked about this on the Long Forgotten show. The DualSense is such a visual departure from the DualShock 4 and from the PS4. Like, we're used to very minimalist black, you know, boxes and controllers, and this is a two-toned paneled controller. Like, it looks sci-fi-y. Like,
it looks like it's from Futurama.
Yeah. And I
want that for the whole console. Like, as I already mentioned, I kind of want this to be a little bit Homer Simpson's car. You know, I want it to be a little bit stupid, because that's funny and it's interesting. And I like funny and interesting. And, you know, the Xbox Series X is so the opposite of that. I mean, I think, you know, that I'm not ragging on that design. I think it looks powerful, which I think is the message that it's meant to be sending across. It's doing a good job there. But like, I want the PlayStation 5 to be like, whoa, you know, like, whoa, what is this to press me and see? I just want, I want it to be kind of stupid and kind of ambitious. And I like that. I like that in technology. I like that the DualSense kind of looked a bit that way. And yeah. I want it to stand out.
You know,
it just be a black box.
Exactly. I mean, like, that's, it happens with every reveal for Nintendo, but like the Switch and the Wii and the Wiimote and the Switch Joy-Cons, like, everyone always goes, oh, that's so silly at first, and then it becomes the most popular thing.
Yeah.
But the misstep that they had in between those was the Wii U, where the console was so insignificant. Like, the look and the design of the console is one of the most forgettable console designs, I think, ever.
Do you know what the Wii U looks like? Have you seen Alien Resurrection?
Yes. Yeah.
So you know how, like, at the end, Sigourney Weaver's like daughter alien was kind of like part human, part xenomorph.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, ugh. Like, it was just like a little bit like, ugh. Like, not super memorable, other than it had weird tits and it was meant to be an infant. Anyway, that was the Wii U. It just wasn't really fully formed. It wasn't a xenomorph. It wasn't a human. It was just this weird kind of distasteful thing in between.
Yeah, well, to me, I'm almost now seeing, like, it's the top of the Xenomorph's head if there was nothing else interesting attached to that dome. If it just stopped there, that's it. Yeah. Mm. And, you know, like, the PS4 design, it's that layer cake design. It is a little more interesting than, I think, the PS3 design that, you know, got knocked as the George Foreman grill. But I do think being a little audacious with the design, it still needs to be interesting and, like, look good, because it's going to sit next to my TV for 5 or 6 years, but being a little ambitious with it, I think, is a good thing. And I do think can go a long way, especially when you have to market that thing and put it in store shelves and on billboards and in TV commercials. It's cool to have something that's memorable.
I agree. Bring on the car.
Exactly. It'll be very interesting to see what we actually get. Obviously, if this event happens next week or a month from now, we'll be covering that on this show and on IGN. I'm going to largely wrap it up there. We'll have talk next week. We had Brian and Max go on a wonderful tirade about Man Eater. I'll get them to replicate that on next week's show. But if you want to know more about Man Eater, they did a whole Up at Noon sponsored episode, but it was a really fun episode that was all shark themed. So you should go check that out. Also, be sure to check out on IGN. I recently put up an interview with Ryan Payton, who is the game director on Marvel's Iron Man VR. That game just went gold, actually, in between us recording and us, the two episodes that went gold, they announced. And we talked about sort of the new gameplay stuff they've been talking about, the Iron Man suit design, some of the fun. He was telling me, you know, like a big wish fulfillment thing is obviously the controllers are Iron Man's gloves. And he was talking about originally they have missiles that come out of the arm, and to switch from the gloves to the missiles on the arm, you would press a button. And he joked and he was like, so many people on my team said, Ryan, that's stupid. You're Iron Man in VR. You should just move your arms like he would to shoot the missiles. And they're like, yeah, that makes sense. And so they changed the design to match that. And he's like,
that's awesome.
They really, really tried to emphasize how can we make every aspect of being Iron Man something you do in VR, not just a button click, because otherwise, why is it a VR game? So we talked about that a lot. It was a really fun interview. He's a super great guy to talk to and easily could have talked for a while. We'll hopefully be able to talk to him again after that game comes out. That's July 3rd. We have a very busy summer of PlayStation, even without this PS5 reveal event, if it happens. But of course, we will be covering everything. I do want to mention on IGN's Summer of Gaming, which kicks off, I believe, June 4th. We have a full schedule of events, gameplay, exclusive reveals, announcements. Obviously, the announcements are a secret for now, but we have a whole schedule that's up and being updated constantly with new info on IGN and on our social feeds. So go check all that stuff out. We have just such an ambitious amount of content going on, some great charity stuff going on in there. And also, Lucy, on the features team, you've been putting together Icons content.
Yeah. So Icons, we've been theming months recently over at IGN, and June's month theme is Icons. So that's like iconic industry figures, iconic franchises. We've got a really cool list of people lined up to interview for that. I can't announce all of them right now, but the ones I can announce are John and Brenda Romero, Brian Fargo, Chris Avalon, and David Hayter, so Solid Snake himself. Awesome. They're really, really fun interviews, and that we've got like big, crunchy written pieces to accompany them as well. But those videos will be threaded through the Summer of Gaming live show, so check them out. Awesome. They're a lot of fun to put together.
That's so great. I can't wait to see those. And we do have, yeah, there's so much awesome content and a lot of varied, really cool stuff. Dev interviews, gameplay reveals, really cool speedrun stuff we have in the works. It's going to be a really, really fun month. And in the middle of it, The Last of Us comes out, you know, just in case we were bored. One of the biggest games of the year comes out too. So June's going to be really fun. And of course, we'll be covering all the Summer of Gaming stuff, the PS5 event if it happens. EA Play Live is happening this month. The Cyberpunk stream is happening, I think, the same day as EA, because the world hates news writers at gaming websites right now, I guess. It's a really, really jam-packed month, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But I think otherwise that pretty much wraps us up for this episode, part two, the redo of episode 647. Lucy, thank you so much for joining me for this episode.
It has been a delight.
I did want to mention quickly before we go out, of course, Summer of Gaming, but also if you use Snapchat, we now have been doing a weekly episode of Beyond on Snapchat. It's sort of a like 3 to 4 minute rundown, maybe a little longer sometimes, of the biggest PlayStation news. So if you don't get tired of hearing my voice on this show for 50 minutes a week, you can go check that out. I believe it airs usually Saturdays, might be a Sunday, but it's on the weekends. You can go check out that Beyond-themed edition of Snapchat every weekend. It's been a lot of fun to put together, and the social team's been doing a really great job with this, so definitely check that out. But otherwise, huge thank you again to Lucy. Thank you to Max and Brian for being on the episode that didn't air. And thank you to our producer, Red, for having to deal with all of these technical issues, but also being willing to jump right back in and do this redo episode with us. We really appreciate it, Red. But thank you so much for listening or watching. This Beyond normally airs Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services around the world. If you're not subscribed to any of those, please subscribe, because, you know, we're going to be having a lot of content soon to talk about. So definitely stay tuned for new episodes. But otherwise, thank you. Thank you so much for listening and or watching. We hope you're well. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rain Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.